Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, everybody. It's Saturday mornings, and we get excited. Move over the Denver omelets, the country potatoes, the sourdough minus the butter. It's that time again, the Doc Talk podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend of me, Dr. Greg Roscoe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles, producing this. 347-205-9631. 60 minutes is better than hearing Dan Rather and everybody out there. So mark this show down. Pass it on to your friends in case you miss it live. Catch the archive on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more of him, less of me. Laying down the red carpet, putting the podium in its place, handed off the mic, the threes. Doc, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And you're bringing another great guest on your great show today.
Well, thank you for all the kind words. Mark, I'm doing fine. You know, Pittsburgh is a little bit cold this part of the country, but you know, it's funny. It was cold here, and our guest is up there in Du Bois, Pennsylvania. It's even colder there. And, you know, as far as our temperature, I think tomorrow it's going to be in the 40s. Then later next week, I think our Thursday is going to be 60 degrees. So it's kind of a roller coaster winter so far. But we're doing well. If people need to get a hold of me, as they have and as they are, GJRMD 308 Outlook.com. I already have emails coming in. I really have a tremendous guest this morning. And this gentleman is an administrator, however, very, very bright, very successful, has done tremendous things in healthcare with growing health systems. His name is Mark Norman. He's a Southern boy. You'll pick up a little bit of an accent here, but overall, the gentleman is just tremendous and very bright. He's been associated with a growing healthcare system in Western Pennsylvania, Mark, since when? About 2013 or 14?
I've been here since 2016, Dr. Roscoe.
16. Good. So we're looking at 6-7 years. And, Mark, you've had the position of being a COO, which is Chief Operating Officer, correct? And, Mark, is that the four-hospital system, or is that the entire, you know, eight-hospital system, if you will?
Yes, that's for the entire health system, which is our eight hospitals, Dr. Roscoe. And again, I appreciate you having me on today. I'm looking forward to this.
Well, very good. We have two, and I know you're very, very busy, believe me. And, you know, I like to thank someone there, Corrine Laboon, who has helped to orchestrate this and get us together. She's done a tremendous job. And again, Mark, I thank you so very much for spending a Saturday morning with me. Again, talking to our listeners. And, you know, we have Mark Mancini in L.A. producing. So, and Mark, I think you have questions already coming in, as I have emails already coming in. You know, what I'd like to talk about today, and, you know, Mark Norman, I'll call you that so we don't get the Marks confused. But, Mark Norman, you know, I'd like to put a little different spin on things. I know you've done a tremendous job, you know, with regard to your responsibilities as COO, you know, working for the organization of Penn Highlands. What I thought with regard to, you know, what you've done, and I kind of want to start back. You were an engineer at one time, correct?
Yes, that's correct. I actually have an industrial engineering degree, which some may say that's an interesting path to healthcare, and it is.
Yes.
But there are some industrial engineers out in healthcare, and really, it fits very well with what we're trying to do in healthcare, and that is obviously, number one, improve quality and improve patient satisfaction, at the same time producing it at a very low cost, which is very critical in today's healthcare environment where we're, you know, limited somewhat on reimbursement and those types of things, and particularly with access, creative, and how we provide the best access to our patients.
Thank you. You know, Mark Norman, you know, with regard to that, can you give us a little bit of a history? How did you get from industrial engineering into healthcare? What was the road, Mark? Now, you were down in Mississippi when this was going on, Tupelo, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, part of actually started with North Mississippi Health Services. How I got into healthcare, I guess I have to give the credit to my wife. Probably without her, I don't know if I would have healthcare or not. She was she's a speech pathologist and was working for North Mississippi Health Services, and I was finishing up my senior year of school at Mississippi State. And she came home one day and she said, "Hey, they are looking for an industrial engineer to work on operational improvement, performance improvement for the health system." And I said, "Oh, wow, really? That sounds really interesting." And really out of curiosity, I went and spoke to one of the administrators for the health system, and it really piqued my interest. I thought this is really a great way to have an effect on the health of people. And it just kind of, it went from there. I started in healthcare, and I really started with the grassroots of really learning the processes of healthcare, spending a lot of time learning, and probably in the first couple of years asking a lot of maybe even dumb questions. But comes from that, sometimes some different perspective, because anytime you have someone like myself who's very process-oriented, we tend to ask a lot of process-oriented questions and try to understand how the system of healthcare works. And I have said this for a long time, and I believe this, is healthcare is one of the most complicated systems businesses operate in the country. And unless you're in the healthcare system, sometimes maybe it's hard to see that. It may not seem that way from the outside looking in at times, but extraordinary, regulatory, issues that have to comply with, and a host of rules and regulations when it comes to reimbursements. And you never can be an expert on everything in healthcare. And I think that's why one of the good things about being part of a health system is you have individuals that are experts in their area, whether it's reimbursement, whether it's a particular service line, and you're able to knowledge share. And I'm a big proponent of sharing knowledge across the organization, because I feel like that's what takes the organization to the next level.
Wonderful. Mark, along those same lines, with your first job, now you were at North Mississippi Health Services for about 10 or 11 years, correct? As operations manager and things like that?
Yes. Just a lot of what I did in the beginnings, again, was performance improvement. I also managed the staffing and the productivity, which is very important in healthcare to make sure that you're staffing according to volumes. We operate on very slim margins in healthcare, and so one of the number one expenses are labor. It is labor.
Yes.
And so that's one of my focuses early on, was making sure we had the right resources in the right places throughout the health system. And that was kind of my initial focus. But really that grew into administrative work, strategic planning for the health system. And then ultimately I had a desire to be a hospital administrator, and then went to work for a couple of different facilities in Mississippi, Critical Access Hospital. And Critical Access Hospitals, to give a very quick overview of what a Critical Access Hospital is.
Please do that. Define that.
Yeah, it's a hospital, a small hospital that has to have less than 25 beds. It has to be a certain distance away from other hospitals to qualify. This program was developed back in the 1990s and really was developed to save small hospitals. And so I actually operated a couple of critical access hospitals in central Mississippi for about 6 years prior to coming to here to Penn Highlands Healthcare. Yeah, so that's real important. Small hospitals, and this kind of leads into why rural healthcare is so important in our communities. Without some of these small hospitals and rural communities, where would the people go for immediate care, whether that's emergency room care, primary care, access to transportation, to traverse long distances is very difficult for a lot of individuals. Just take, for instance, here. I know you know this area quite well. We're in west central Pennsylvania here in Dubois right now. It's 2 hours to Pittsburgh. And if you've got a serious health issue, you can't wait 2 hours for care. And that's why it's so critically Correct. Important that we keep care local in our communities and provide this level of services you know, that we can provide so that patients don't have to travel long distances. Now, sure, there may be certain high-level services that you may need to travel for.
Oh, but
for the most part,
yeah.
We want to provide many local services as we can local.
Beautiful. Mark, you know, if I can go back just a little bit, you know, in your first position here with North Mississippi, so I'm going back to the 2000 area, and then, you know, as you developed your skills, you know, as far as the direction and in doing a lot of these things that you provided, you know, productivity analysis and things like that, where did you learn to do that? You know, how did you go on to take
really
certain projects on and to be successful? Go ahead.
At least my healthcare experience, obviously my engineering background, you know, planted the seeds for that from my education standpoint. But then really it was one of my first projects that I looked at was just the processes in the pharmacy. So really going in and learning all the different processes from order verification to how the meds end up on the floors and all of the processes with the medication administration. So really it just started by going into different departments and learning how all the processes work.
And, you know, Mark, before you went in there, you know, how did they do it? You know, who devised the systems prior to that? You know, prior to process improvement, how were things being done? Did anybody look at it before? Or, you know, we have the Six Sigma programs. You know, we have the Malcolm Baldrige, which you are very aware of.
Right.
What happened
right.
before that? Why wasn't that looked at before?
Yes, I will say that healthcare, in my opinion, for a long time has been behind the curve of a lot of other industries when it comes to performance improvement. If you go back to the process improvement of the Toyota way and all of those different performance
yes.
improvement, you know, strategies that were used back in the 40s and 50s as manufacturing really in this country. A lot of that took a long time to filter into healthcare. And it began to filter into healthcare in the 90s as reimbursement became even, you know, tighter for hospitals. And
yes.
so hospitals had a way to become more productive and more efficient in how they operate. And, you know, that's continued, as you well know, into the
yes.
2000s. And even here recently, the challenges are even greater, not only for all hospitals across the country, but particularly rural hospitals in rural America.
They are. And, you know, Mark, with, you know, as you've moved up the scale here with, you know, your experience, you know, one thing that I see throughout the literature with regard to the growth of healthcare systems, I see a word, you know, being used quite a bit. And the word is trust. You know, having the local people, you know, your people that are using your facilities, trusting what you're doing. You know, no doubt you deal with that all the time. You know, having the trust
yeah.
of the patients, the trust of people that want to come to your facility. Do you see that also?
Oh, yes. I think that's what is really exciting to me about healthcare in rural communities, because you know your neighbors, it's your family and your friends that you're taking care of. I'm sure you probably, when you go to the grocery store as a ENT doctor, get pulled to the side and ask lots of questions.
Sure.
That's common in rural communities. But it also makes that a very special thing to work, because you're working for the people in your community, your family and you know, to add to that, I think one thing that is very important is to have local physicians that are from the area. And one of the things that we have done, and again, that goes back to that trust factor you just mentioned, Dr. Roscoe.
Yes, sir.
People they know that have grown up in their communities. They've known their father or their grandfather. And, you know, I hear
right.
community members say, when you were this high, you know, when you were a little boy, but
yeah.
they grow up and some doctors, and it's so important to keep those people in our communities. And so one of the things that we've done is we coined it our Bring Them Home campaign, and that is all designed around keeping in contact with local men and women from our communities and making sure that we stay in touch with them while they're going through medical school, their residency, because we want to bring those people back. Those are the types of individuals that we want to come back, because to your point, rural health care is all about trust, and it is the number one thing that I think people in the community look to. We have some of that, as you well know, in this health system, Penn Highlands. We have some, you know, family connections and people that
Absolutely.
Have grown up in the region. And that's one of our success stories is recruiting local providers to bring back home, because it's so important. Because those physicians, when they come back to a local community to practice, it's just a big draw for your local community. They build practices very quickly. And again, it comes back to the trust that you mentioned.
Nope, you're absolutely right. You know, I have personal experience with that, you know, working in Dubois for an awful lot of years, my children going to school in Dubois. And of course, as you know, I have a son that is practicing medicine in Dubois as well as a primary care. So it is, and people recognize the name, the family. People like to come in and say, yep, I knew you, you know, 20 years ago when you had black hair. They like seeing those types of things and understanding what they're going through. And, you know, Mark, the words, again, I looked up several different words here to talk with you. The other word that I see through the literature also is culture, you know, the local culture. And no doubt, Mark, when you were down in Mississippi, the culture had to be a little different than Dubois, Pennsylvania. Do you agree with that?
Well, I would to a certain degree, but when it comes to health care, really, you know, rural Mississippi, when I first came here to Pennsylvania for my interview, actually I was surprised how rural this area really is. And in some respects, a lot more rural than some parts of Mississippi even. So I was quite surprised by that. So I would say maybe in some ways it's different. Down south, of course, down south we love our fried foods up here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a different menu. But I would say really from a healthcare standpoint, the things that still ring true from a rural standpoint are very true here. It's, again, the trust that people have in their local clinicians. It's also one thing that strikes me as very similar is the board members' commitment to the strategy of community hospitals. And community hospitals
Great.
Are so that, you know, and it's, behind every strong rural town is a strong health system. And I think that often is very overlooked in today's world. Typically, a rural hospital in a town is its largest employer. And when a hospital is no longer there, that town becomes half of what it was before. And so it's just so critically important. So I go back to, a similarity that I see between Mississippi and Pennsylvania is just the commitment of the board that we have here,
Wonderful.
But also the board members that we had back in Mississippi. It's a commitment to keep care local, to take care of their
Yes.
their friends and So I would say, Dr. Roscoe, there are a lot of similarities. I would say that, again, I think some of the health disparities may be a little bit greater in Mississippi than maybe even here, but still they exist even in rural Pennsylvania,
Sure.
as you well know, limited
Yeah.
you know, to care. And sometimes people just don't go to the doctor like they should and make sure they're having their
Sure.
annual wellness visit. Making sure they're having their preventative care, such as mammographies and colonoscopies, some of the basics that go a long way in improving
yeah.
the health of people.
Which is part of our job as a provider to help educate our patients on, you know, the needs that we need to go ahead and address, but with their help overall. And, you know, Mark, talking about culture, just a point here. You know, when you have different cultures, let's say Amish people, a large community of Amish, you know, or people that don't speak the same language, whether it's a Chinese or Vietnamese population, you know, how do you address that? You know, are you different outreach programs to help with that? You know, what is that, you know, what is that communication, Mark, that you'd want to bring those people into the trust family of, you know, what you're doing with healthcare? Or don't you see that as an issue?
Well, I think it can be an issue. You know, in this region, we do have a fairly a large number of Amish. Actually, in Mississippi, we had some Mennonites there in that region. You know, and they certainly, I think it's for making sure to provide the access and to have the community outreach that you're communicating. We have a very strong marketing and community outreach division that focuses on getting our message
good
and the services we have available. So I think that's really how you do it. You know, sometimes
beautiful
those individuals are harder to reach, obviously, as well, which makes it a little more difficult.
Yes, and, you know, I'm getting a lot of emails here too, Mark Norman. Mark, you know, with the hospitals that you're working with now and you're in charge of, you know, up in the Clearfield County, Jefferson County, now you're down, you know, south with Monongahela, Pennsylvania. You're down there with, you know, Fayette County. Are you seeing different cultural groups, or do we have the means set forth to go ahead and start to develop trust, take care of culture in these somewhat distant communities? And as the healthcare system develops, no doubt that'll be an issue, maybe even out of the state of Pennsylvania. I mean, do we have the infrastructure, in a sense, to handle ongoing, say, randomity or ongoing cultural shifts?
Yes, most definitely. And what we, just to give you a little bit of background, we've only been around as a health system, as you know, since 2011, the system was formed. And originally it was this Northwest region, which consists of our hospitals, DuBois, here in DuBois, and then obviously
yep
our Clearfield facility, our facility in Brookville, and then our facility in Elk, which really formed the first four hospitals, the group. We then expanded and added Huntingdon, our facility in Huntingdon, as well as Tyrone. And then to your point, we had two acquisitions in the Mon Valley region. That's Penn Highlands Mon Valley and Penn Highlands Collinsville, which happened back in April. So, yeah, those are the current hospitals in the system. We're really three different regions. We're this DuBois region, which is we consider the Northwest, our central region, which is Tyrone and Huntingdon, and our
yes
to-be state college facility that we're building that will be opened in 2024. And then our Mon Valley, Connellsville. Some people may say, well, why would you grow? Well, part of it is it is the scale that you need. And what I mean by scale, to survive in healthcare today, you need a certain amount of volume spread out to really cover your fixed costs. Because as you well know, there's a lot of fixed costs in healthcare, whether it's the physicians that you have to offer a service or the nurses, the
supplies. How about bricks and mortar?
Yeah, all the bricks and mortar that you have to have as well. All of that is very important. And We have tried to, over the years, we had a very aggressive capital improvement plan for our facilities because a lot of them were aged and dated. And a lot of that's really centered around improving our facilities in the DuBois region, particularly because it is our hub hospital, our tertiary hub, where a lot of our higher-end medicine is located. We've put together a very strong strategic plan around our master's facility plan, which includes several medical office buildings, as well as a new emergency room, which will be open here in a couple of months. So we really tried to put a lot of services here locally in DuBois, but as well as our smaller facilities where we've added, whether it's medical office buildings, renovations to our nursing homes, which are important, and as a host of other outpatient buildings, such as a building we recently opened in Punxsutawney, just strengthening and improving that access is very important to us.
Wonderful. Mark, thank you. I want to go back, Mark, to what the hospital is doing for access. You know, how are we accessing these facilities? Mark Mancini has a load of questions coming into L.A. Mark, do you want to go ahead? Mark Mancini in the studio.
Yeah, we getting loaded up on this great show and proud to produce it for you each and every week, my brother.
Thank
Victor
you.
From Coral Gables, Florida, chiming in, and he basically says, guys, I love this. I can learn a lot from you guys. Do you think it'll ever get to the point where this country will be like Canada, where we will have health insurance if we're born here? Oh, that's a great question.
Mark, yeah, do you see changing to a socialistic system at all, Mark, or a one-payer system? Is that, you know, from your vantage point, do you look at that or see that for the future of healthcare?
Well, I do think it's a possibility. I don't think that would be the best direction for this country to have a single-payer system. I just feel like the government would have even too much control over that and too much say in, you know, how services are provided. So I think that doesn't get a talk. Now, certainly, if it gives everybody health insurance, but as a whole, does it really improve the health of the people in the region? And I think that could be debated.
Sure.
I really think that the current healthcare system was certainly strained in this country. There's limited, as you well know, Medicare, Medicaid dollars. There's an aging population, so a lot of resources are being used right now by those payers. So it's not likely for us to see huge increases in our reimbursement. And really that goes back to us learning how to be more efficient as a healthcare system using technology and other things that we're going to have to do because – really, those are things that we'll have to do to
sure.
be effective.
Good. Go ahead, Mark Mancini.
Yeah, Carney from Lake Havasu coming in basically says, is there a difference between going to see a practitioner at a county hospital compared to a free clinic that volunteers their services?
Ooh. Mark, do you deal with that at all?
I don't deal with that much. I mean, obviously, we have a local free medical clinic here that we, you know, we try to support locally for people that are underserved and don't have access to health care. So we do have a local free medical clinic that we do try to work with and support how we can through different, you know, providing supplies and clinicians to help staff that clinic.
Go ahead, Mark. Mancini.
Mike from Bellingham, Washington, and I'll give it back to you guys, says, can you pay too much for health care? I have a family of four. I pay almost $2,000 a month with a family of four to get the top-notch medical insurance. Is there anything cheaper? Am I getting ripped off at this? Yeah, wow.
Mark, can I handle that too?
Yeah, one thing I'll mention, there are a lot of studies out there that say in rural America, rural hospitals provide care at a lower cost, and there's a lot of statistics out there that point to that. When we're looking at, you know, value and the most efficient place to receive care at the most cost-effective, typically it is in rural communities, and a lot of that goes back to when you have to travel longer distances to a larger facility that may be in a bigger city that has a lot, you know, more resources and even higher cost structure. So some of that cost does get passed on to the patients. It certainly depends on the market. It depends on the hospital in particular. But in general, rural hospitals tend to be a little more efficient and a little less costly.
Thank you very much. You know, going along with it, I have an email here for Mark Norman. Mark, I have a patient that wants to know about transparency of costs. You know, how can she compare costs of different health systems for getting a total hip or a total knee? Is there a mechanism today for that transparency?
Yes, and we have that as well. You can actually go to our website for that. And really, healthcare systems are now required to have a way for patients to compare the costs and be able to then compare to another facility. I will say that is quite difficult, as you well know, Dr. Roscoe, because
yes,
you may not know the exact procedure or the exact CPT code that is going to be used
right
in your care. And it's very hard for a layperson to go into the system and to choose the right procedure. So there's how each hospital sets that up can be very confusing for patients. So I think the general idea is a good idea that, you know, yes, we should be able to have price transparency. It's a lot easier said than done is what I would say.
Yes. No, I agree with that, Mark. As far as, again, comparing CPT codes, you can, but, you know, every individual is somewhat unique. You know, we're not sure that there's going to be the CPT code that'll be the procedure
right
or any post-operative complications or additional care somebody needs. So I've always had a problem with that as well, with, you know, people saying about cost and price and where I should go, where's the cheaper, you know, a healthcare system that has good outcomes. And no doubt, Mark, as life goes on, that may be more standardized down the road. But again, people are looking at it, and people do talk about cost, as you know. I don't know if you get any calls on that, but I know occasionally people will talk to me about, I'm having my surgery at your hospital. What's it going to cost me? So it's a little hard to even track it down and say, well, it's going to cost you X. You know, your insurance will pay Y, therefore this is what you have left. Those are very hard questions to answer. Do you find the same thing, Mark?
Yes. And really it depends on the insurance that you have and all
correct
of those different things. And so it's not as clear cut as it may sound. And certainly we have our billing specialist and that can get on the phone with our patients and try to give the best estimate possible or the care.
Oh, yeah.
But as you, the point you made is you sometimes don't know. You get in to do a surgery and then you end up needing to do something else as well. And so that adds
correct
to the cost and some of that's not really known until the whole procedure is done.
You're absolutely right. And like I'm saying, I think that goes to the point that, you know, everybody's body's a little bit different, even though we're doing a similar procedure. And we're good at what we're doing, it still may not come out to be the same cost as maybe what your sister-in-law had 2 years ago, you know? So it is something
yeah
that's a lot of variability. And again, I think it's a matter, I know from a practitioner standpoint, people like to talk about money. And, you know, indeed, we do communicate that. We do share our fees with them. And we do try to give them an estimate, you know, the best guess as to what, at least from our surgery, you know, what would be left over, what would be, you know, what that have to do minus the deductible, et cetera. And then, of course, as you know, we have the hospital cost. We need that care. And it's another arm that patients need to look at. And, again, it's just
right
not cut
right
and dry that right. And again, if they want to go to a larger hospital or go to the city, I think you're absolutely correct. The costs are going to be higher. And now, again, what will their insurance pay? Of course, we don't know that. It's hard to get that data. But I do find, Mark Norman, people ask about dollars an awful lot. And I don't, like I'm saying, I don't know if you're getting that with people. And, you know, again, in different parts of the healthcare system, are they concerned about cost? And, you know, as far as what you've done, just going on to, you know, your operations, you know, are you able to streamline operations efficiently and standardize in all the systems hospitals? Is it easier said than done? Or is it something you go in every day? My goal today is we're going to cut cost. How do you handle your days, Mark?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of that comes into the clinical standardizations of our service lines. And, you know, those are cardiac care, ortho care, oncology care. So I think it's very important. But yeah, to your point, every patient is different. But there are also some standard clinical pathways that really need to be followed that are considered to be the standards of care, as you well know. I'm sure our chief officer could get on the phone with you maybe one day and talk through that aspect of it more than I could. But it's very important for us to use somewhat of a standard of care, because that comes along with it, the supplies and the standardization of supplies and making sure you have what you need and the right amount at the right time. All of that is very important to making sure the healthcare system works efficiently.
You're absolutely right. And Mark, you know, as a surgeon, and again, the hospital's excellent with having inventory. You know, I can't say I need X, Y, and Z, and they'll tell me it's on order. We'll have it next week. You know, I need it now. So we've got to carry inventory on many, many, many products, which, you know, we need,
yeah.
And sometimes we're not sure that we need. So, again, that supply chain issue and inventory issue is a big expense. And I think maybe patients don't realize that indeed it cost us a lot to run a top-notch facility. And, you know, as you go ahead with technology, whether it's the Da Vinci robot or we're doing, you know, balloon sinuplasties, et cetera, the equipment gets to be very expensive. And indeed, we need to have all the parts to make the healthcare work and to keep our health system top-notch. Don't you agree with that?
Yes, I agree with that 100%. And really, that has been challenging over the last 2 years, in particular when it comes to the supplies and the supply chain. Obviously, just like other businesses across the country have been affected on getting supplies, we have as well. And, you know, obviously that puts a very much a strain. And obviously, too, that has led to increased costs for us, whereas our reimbursement flat 2-3% a year increases. You know, our supplies have gone up by 15% and even 20% on a lot of cases. And I think for the layperson out there, they probably don't, you know, understand the amount of cost in equipment. You know, we spend annually about $15 million just on standard capital replacements, basically.
Yes,
to give you some perspective. As you well know, an MRI machine, it's $2 million, $2 million expense. And, you know, they don't last forever. And so you have to continuously make sure equipment is up to date and to provide the best services possible. But there are a lot of fixed costs in healthcare. So, again, very important that we understand how we go about providing care in a very responsible and effective way.
Nope, I think your job, Mark, is a very, very big job. And, you know, with regard to margin, you know, for the healthcare system, we looked, you know, researching and looking at different healthcare systems. It's only a couple percent. It's 3 or 4%,
yeah,
maybe 5% at most margin to operate these healthcare systems.
Yeah, and if you look across, you know, the country, particularly this last year, it's been a very challenging year for hospitals across the country, and it's really the impact of the expenses. It's, you know, our labor expenses with contract labor. There's shortages of RNs and shortages of certain positions that, you know, everyone is dealing with all across the country. And we've had to rely on contract labor, which obviously raises the expense structure for hospitals. And really this year, if you'll probably note that probably over 50% of rural facilities are not even in the positive. Certainly a strain. We certainly, are probably fared better than most. And I think a lot of that comes back to being focused on our strategic plan, making sure we're providing high-quality services, and that we are recruiting the providers every year. You know, one thing we again have been successful is recruiting between 90 and 100 physicians or mid-level providers, nurse practitioners, and healthcare systems really have to rely on mid-level providers, your physician assistant,
nurse
practitioners, out of the primary care.
No, I agree with you. And, you know, I see that every day as well. I've got nurse practitioners in my practice. I know the hospital does. And, again, you know, they're very well trained. But, indeed, for our specialists, they do need some specialty training to be competent and to give good care, you know, if the specialist is not around. And, Mark, I have another email here and where they're asking, you know, the scope of the operations for hospitals today. It's just not inpatient care. They take care of outpatient, even home health. They own ambulance services. They own pharmacies. What's going on? What's going on with that, Mark Norman?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. Really, hospitals, if you're just a hospital, it's very tough in today's healthcare market to be successful as just a hospital. And what I mean by that is, and I'll expand upon it, you are leading to it, you really have to be involved in the entire continuum of care. And what I mean by that is not only your hospital, your traditional hospital inpatient and outpatient services, but also care in other areas outside the home, such as home health and skilled nursing facilities, which we have several of those as well, and personal care homes, which we have a number of personal care homes. We also have retail pharmacies. We have about 10 retail pharmacies across our service area, and we have found that to be a very big success for us to be diversified and very, you know, several different service lines. Because, as you well know, not every hospital service is profitable, especially
correct,
if it's a Medicaid patient. So we have to be very diversified in how we deliver care, and that's why we've made it a point to be very diligent about being involved in other sectors of healthcare, such as home health, hospice, skilled nursing facilities, personal care homes, and retail pharmacies. So we've really made a concerted effort to just become more diversified.
And, you know, Mark, having said all that, is that the plan which each of your acquisitions, so to speak, hospitals that you like to implement, or do you just select certain facilities to do that? You know, is that the overall blueprint of success for Penn Highlands?
Yes, I think that's one of the obvious things that has been successful, especially in this DuBois region, as it's the legacy core hospitals of the health system. Those strategies have been effective in really providing that continuum of care. So as a patient, it's more seamless. Now, certainly we have our opportunities to improve that and make it even more seamless, particularly through technology and other solutions that all healthcare organizations are really looking at to help, you know, make it more patient-centric. But having that continuum of care, knowing that you are part of the healthcare system, and when it comes to electronic medical records and having the ability to share that information and understand the different points of healthcare that person has been in the system is very valuable to the clinician actually treating that patient on that particular day.
Wonderful. You know, Mark, with regard to, I'd like to give our listeners, Mark, some pearls, we're talking about what we've talked about and then giving them something to take home, whether they're in Florida or Washington or California. You know, what do our listeners, you know, need to look for when they're looking for healthcare or a healthcare system? You know, are there certain salient points that you would say, yep, they've got to have a hospital that has a lot of diversity. They need to have outreach. They need to have doctor's offices. They need to have, you know, residency programs. Mark, what do you think the key factors would be to tell a patient what to look for if there's opportunity in their community to make decisions? Can you help with that?
Yeah, I think it comes back to being able to provide care local, whether that's at a small hospital, which, you know, we have several of those, such as Brookville and Elk and Tyrone. All of those facilities can provide the vast majority of services for patients. But what patients should look for in a health system when there's something that can't be done locally, that there is a strong tertiary provider, such as what we have here at DuBois, and to be able to provide the higher-end service such as cardiac care, high-end orthopedic care, oncology care, behavioral health. Behavioral health is a big access issue across the country,
yes,
and we've actually put a lot of resources in a building project to increase our number of behavioral health beds. That is a big void across the system. You know, I think that's a very important one. But going back to having a very strong provider network that is aligned with the health system, I think is very important attribute for patients to look for. Because, again, that you end up having that continuum of care, and that is so important in the journey of health care and understanding from a provider standpoint.
Yeah, Mark, you left one on. That was ENT care. I think you that was an oversight on your part.
Yeah. And by the way, that's when it comes to rural communities, very difficult to recruit ENT physicians. Gastroenterology is a big one. Rheumatology, and I guarantee you, you can go interview any healthcare administrator out there, and those will be some of the top services that everyone is looking for.
Yeah, absolutely right. And we're fortunate to have several good providers, Mark, in those areas to complement our family doctors. You know, Mark, I have one more here. They're saying, should I look for a healthcare system that has a residency program? Is that important for our listeners to think about, you know, if they're training doctors at their facility? Do you want to handle that one?
Yes. I think that is I think that's a very important attribute. I think first off, when we do have a family medicine residency program as well as a psychiatry residency program, and it's important for us because we use that as a way to recruit those individuals to stay here once they complete their residency. Yep. About 35% to 40% of residents typically stay local to where they completed their residency. And so we use it as a recruitment tool, which obviously helps enhance access. But I think the often overlooked part of it is that it creates a continuous learning for even the providers.
Correct.
The providers of education and oversight. Sometimes it can be we had some providers here that were a little hesitant when we started that residency program. You know, I'm not sure I'll have time to devote to the mentoring, residents. But we have gotten a lot of feedback over the last several years that it has really been a rewarding thing because it not only they are mentoring and educating future clinicians, but they get a feeling of also educating themselves of a continuous improvement in that aspect. So I think it's a very important part of a health system that you are trying to grow your own, and it creates a learning environment that I spoke about earlier as well.
No, I agree with that, Mark. I think it's an excellent point. And I know me personally, being part of the healthcare system, I do get family residents on my service. And indeed, it's got us to the point now over the years that we've actually put together a compendium of ear, nose, and throat work that we help train our family doctors from the different aspects of ENT that they take something home with them that they're able to use, you know, in the future, so that we help to complement that a little bit, even they're not primarily ENT doctors, but they're learning to look at the ears, the nose, the throat, understand pathology, and again, carry away things, vocabulary in addition, and treatment cycles to help improve the quality of their eventual care. But that was excellent. Mark Mancini, what do you have in L.A.?
Well, we got a lot of questions still coming in. Chris from Wheeling, West Virginia, he said, hey, boys, really love this show. Keep the thing continuing. You're talking about EMTs and everything. Is there a shortage of nurses and EMTs in this country now? Do you see this progressing as we go on in life, or is this going to be a big boom down the line because we need much more of these people? That's another great question.
Mark Dorman, do you want to handle that?
Yeah, I can handle that.
Go ahead, Mark.
Obviously, there's a bunch of those key positions, such as ENTs, but also nurses, as was pointed out in the question. That's You know, that I think we're going to be dealing with nursing shortages for some time. I don't think there is a quick fix to this issue. I think it goes back to partnering with local schools, which we have done, to scholarship individuals. We have several affiliations with local schools for RNs, for LPNs, scrub techs, to provide scholarships for their education, and in return they come and work for us for a number of years. I think that's the long-term play, is educating additional, because there are just not enough clinicians out there. A lot of nurses are at retirement age, and through the COVID pandemic, as you probably read a lot about, a lot of nurses retired.
Yeah,
they got turned out during that time, and they just said, okay, enough's enough. And I think that made the situation, you know, obviously even worse from a shortage standpoint. But I think it's
positions
very critical.
As well, and, Mark.
Yeah, and positions.
You know, this is occurring as well.
Yes, exactly. So I think it's very important that, and that's what we're doing, is trying to affiliate with schools to promote scholarships so those individuals will, you know, be here in 2 years after they complete their programs. But obviously we're doing everything a lot of other health systems are doing, and that's, you know, sign-on bonuses and referral bonuses for people, for our employees that know someone, and if they can convince them to come work for us, then there's some money for those people that refer. So we're doing all of those types of things. But I think the long-term play is the education part of it, and that's not going to happen overnight.
Mark, your programs have been very successful, correct, with recruiting, retaining, you know, maintaining employment. You've had a lot of success.
Yeah, so to give you some perspective, as far as our physicians, we have a turnover rate of less than 10%, the national average, somewhere around 11%, 12%, and we continue to stay around the 9%. I mean, obviously you have that's inclusive of physicians that retire, physicians that might, you know, leave, you know, and go somewhere else. But that's a strong number, and we're proud of that. So as we recruit, we're recruiting in excess of that turnover amount. So every year we're adding to our total number of providers in our health system, which is currently over.
Tremendous.
Yes, about 300 employed providers across the health system, and total positions of about 100 that are on our medical staff. So, that's what I would say regarding that one.
Yes. Yes, we have, you know, very good medical staff. We do have consistency. We do have turnover as well. But again, you know, we're still keeping a great number of providers, as well as our mid-levels, Mark, all right, to provide care to our communities. Mark,
yes,
Van
the mid-level.
Go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to throw a couple more as we wind down this show with about 7 minutes and change. Gail from Fort Myers, Florida, says, guys, really enjoy the show. She's a routine listener on this great show each and every Saturday, so props to Gail. She said she's got four vaccine shots. Could this be an everyday thing moving forward, even though the president says we're kind of coming out of COVID-19? Could we see vaccines on a yearly basis like a flu shot? Another good one.
Yeah, you know, as far as I'll take that. You know, in general, we have to look at this. This is not something that is a fixed point. These COVID variants that we have, as well as vaccines, are a very dynamic situation, and it's a moving target. I think it's hard at this point to generalize or standardize these vaccines for the future. So I think she needs to keep her eye on the news, keep her providers, you know, in the loop, and maybe follow with things. But it's a very dynamic situation. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, from Bucks County.
Mark Dorman, go ahead.
Provide that expertise. I think, you know, you can find a lot of opinions on the internet. Some might be correct, some may not be correct. But I would make sure you listen to your primary care provider. for their advice, because they're going to have the best information for you.
Correct. They'll have the most current of what's going on overall. Mark Mancini in L.A., go ahead.
Yeah, let me throw one more here. Joe from Bucks County, PA, chiming in, says he's heard it on the show that we've talked about medical insurance and, you know, maintaining it, and he's heard the guy that's paying $2,000 a month. Some people are cutting back because with inflation and everything going on in today's society, it's hard to provide for the family. So the first thing that's being cut is the medical insurance. I don't want to cut mine, but I've kind of tapped into it as far as liquidating some of the things as far as prescriptions, the free prescriptions. I end up buying the prescriptions now. Wow. Yeah, I can see this.
Wow.
Well, guys,
I can pick it up from my standpoint, then I'll turn it over to Mark Norman. We see that as well. You know, people coming in with very little coverage, large deductibles. However, we still provide health care. And our hospital, the Penn Highlands, allows us to get these people in. And again, they may be on a payment system of some type, but indeed, we still provide care. And Mark Dormer, do you agree with that?
Yes, most definitely. We, you know, obviously any kind of emergent care we take care of, despite the ability to pay, obviously, as a not-for-profit health system.
Correct.
And then we have a lot of different payment arrangements that we can provide to the patients as well.
So it's something, you know, as far as the health care system, Mark Norman, speaking to you again, you know, it's a matter of trust, that they have trust that they can be taken care of. There may be some financial implications, but indeed they will receive care. Am I speaking out of turn on that, Mark Norman, or is that true?
Oh, that's absolutely true, Dr. Roscoe.
Thank you. All right.
Wow.
Mark Mancini, well, what do you have?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, as we wrap this up, just to recap it with less than 2 minutes, and then we'll close it out, and another great show, my friends.
Well, thank you. Mark Norman, I want to thank you very, very much. Mark, do you have any closing statement you'd like to say about, you know, philosophy or where the healthcare system is going and, you know, what's on the horizon next, Mark Norman? Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I'll just underscore again the importance of having strong rural hospitals in all parts of the country. I think it's very important for the quality of life for all the people in this you know, great country. And I'll just say that going forward, there are a lot of challenges, but we're trying to head them on, and I think a lot of that is going to come from recruitment of providers, continuing that process. Being diligent of recruiting clinicians. Those are going to be the things that are critical for the success of our facility, but also for healthcare systems all across the country. We're all dealing with the same things. But I think the healthcare system obviously will need to continue to provide care in an efficient way because we can't continue with the cost structure that we currently see today because of the reimbursement issues that we've already talked about. It hasn't kept up with that, with the cost of care. So it's very important for us to provide care efficiently and streamline it going forward.
Mark Norman, I want to thank you very much. You know, as far as what you're saying, Mark Norman, I think we have another show in this here. I think we need to talk again about maybe selection of service lines, you know, how you do that, you know, what's needed. And how we all deal with decreasing reimbursements in our businesses, because indeed it affects us all. So Mark Norman, I want to thank you again very, very much. And Mark Mancini, what do you have to finish up here?
Well, I'll tell you, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you, Mark, and then I'll give it over to Dr. Greg Roscoe and we'll wrap this up.
Yes, I appreciate
Go ahead, Mark.
You know, today again. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Dr. Greg Roscoe, how can people get a hold of you as we get a little bit cut off from
Yeah, we just heard that. But again, I want to thank Mark Norman very much for spending his Saturday morning with us. People can get a hold of me, as they have been, GJRMD, 308outlook.com. Again, next week, Super Bowl Saturday, we're having an NFL retired player talking with us again about football, about a variety of NFL issues, how older players are being taken care of. We talk about concussion protocols. We talk about the big game. So we have a lot to talk about next week. I believe we have two or three other guests on as well on Super Bowl Saturday. So, Mark Norman, take it away. Or
looking
Mark
forward to
it. Take it away.
Yeah, looking forward to that. And I want to thank everybody that listened to the show. Props to Mark Norman out there alongside Dr. Greg Roscoe. Back next week, same time, same channel. Till then, have a blessed one, guys.
Thank you all.
Thank
very
you.
Much.